All right. Well, I checked from, I went through the old broadcasts and I found that the last time we did this was June of 2024.
Wow, okay. So it's been a bit over, oh yeah, over a year now.
Over a year. It's almost been a year and a
Yeah.
half, right? Because
Year and a
it's
half.
December.
Yep.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah, a year and a half. So I, the first thing I thought of was like, holy hell, where'd a year and a half go?
No kidding.
Yeah. I was like, I actually checked it twice. I'm like, no, I must have missed one. So I went back and I scrolled through the list again. I'm like, no, I didn't miss one. So yeah, it was June 2024. There you go.
Wow.
We've got a bit to catch up on
Yeah, that's for sure.
in 45-ish minutes.
One or two things have happened
Just
since then.
one or two things. And then the other thing I was thinking of was just because I was like, well, how the hell was it that long? And then I remembered how quickly my November went by. Like, just, I don't
Yeah.
know, as we get closer to the end of the year, it seems like it's getting faster and faster. Like, it's already what, December 3rd?
Yeah, it feels like it's really flying this year for whatever reason. I mean,
Yeah.
it's all the announcements.
I don't
Things are
know.
changing really fast.
Yeah. I said somebody I was talking to the other day, and I don't know exactly what we were actually chatting about, but they basically said something about there is so many new things that I feel like all I'm doing at this point is trying to stay caught up. Like I'm not
Treading
actually
water,
learning
basically.
anything new, but I'm just trying to read all of the stuff so that if somebody
Yeah.
asks me, I'm like, oh yeah, I heard about that. But you don't really have enough time to dive into anything in great detail. I don't know. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was last week that three major, just in the realm of Gen AI alone, like three major models came out in that week.
Yeah.
It was like, definitely, it's all happening really fast. And also reInvent doesn't help, but
Yeah, and actually that's a perfect segue. Why don't we talk about reInvent? I marked it as day one in my cheat sheet, but I guess it was really day two. But I think of it as day one because it's, unless something changed this year, I think it's the first keynote was yesterday, right?
yeah,
Or
I
was
think
there a
so.
keynote on Monday? I don't know.
We'll have to go back and watch.
Yeah, I don't know. So I made a few little cheater notes. So let's go through them. I picked four things, and as I was saying to you before we got started, the fourth thing really wasn't from reInvent, but I think it's an interesting thing. So I'll spring that one on you. But let's just go through the list. And if you have anything from your watching then or reading, just let me know. And
All
we'll
right.
do the same thing they did in the keynote. We'll just talk about Gen AI, and then at the very end, we'll say, oh, by the way, this too. All right. So
Perfect.
the thing that got my eye, and these are, as far as I know, these are all previews, so they're not GA at this point, but were the Frontier agents, or yeah, Frontier agents. And I actually looked up what AWS considers to be a frontier agent. And this is directly from their website. It's very fancy. It's an autonomous, massively scalable AI agent that can work for hours without requiring human intervention.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the first thing that kind of made me chuckle because I'm like, I don't know. I'll believe the working for hours without human intervention when I actually see it. But that's the definition on their website. I'm sure they didn't coin this term, but I didn't bother going anywhere else to try to find any other information. So that's all I have. So let's go through. Let's go. I think I wrote down three. I think they talked about three. So the first one was the Kiro agent, which essentially I summed it up as, speed up your software delivery lifecycle is essentially what I took from the announcement. Did you get a chance to look at that? Did you hear anything about that one yesterday? Any thoughts on the first agent?
So I've looked at Kiro before. I guess they're integrating it more into. Is this available in the console, this one?
To be honest, I don't even know. I was going to look today, and then
Okay.
I real work got in the way, and I just didn't have a chance to go back and look. I'm not quite sure where it is. I would suspect for now it's probably in the console.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I know OpenAI is doing they're offering that Codex service, right? So that's that runs an agent on their servers. So maybe AWS is doing the same here.
Same
So
thing.
if that's true, that's interesting. I would like to look into it. I know we started using Q a little more regularly. So if this can tie into that would be pretty good. So it's specifically for, so this is probably working out of their IDE and then tying it back to cloud compute.
Yeah, I would suspect. Yeah. And because it's a frontier agent, actually, sorry, let me make a note here. You made me think of something that I wanted to talk about. Hugh, I have a funny, what I'm going to call guardrail story
Oh,
about
yeah.
Q here in a second. So I just made myself a note to not forget. Because they're saying working for hours without requiring human intervention, I would suspect it's got to be leveraging some sort of,
Has to.
off of your end, off your client, and running work on the AWS platform somewhere, right? I would suspect. So I think it's worth some more look. I don't. I'll save my comments because we're gonna do a from then. I called it from then to now because we haven't talked for a long time, and just talk about sort of where everything is. So I put Kiro on that list. So we'll leave Kiro comments on Kiro until then. The next one was there's a DevOps agent as well, and I jotted a quick note. Supports, this is what I thought was interesting, supports AWS, multi-cloud, and hybrid environments. So I would suspect there's got to be some way to connect it, right, to these other environments, whether you're on a different cloud provider or on-prem or something like that. And then it basically, the marketing spiel that I got was it can help you with DevOpsy type stuff, right? And I know that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but the way I took it was sort of automation, pipelines, stuff like that, that it can kind of help you with. And I think the other thing that I noticed, I hope I'm not mixing it up with another announcement, but it kind of learns over time about your environment and understands sort of your processes and how you work. And then because it's this long-running agent too, doesn't lose context. Like if you're using a CLI and you close your window and move on, do something else, you come back, that agent, for the most part, out of the box, wouldn't know what the hell you were talking about before. But my understanding from these frontier agents is they won't lose context like that, that they'll kind of continuously learn about stuff in your environment, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to have some sort of state storage or context storage, session resumption, and maybe like a RAG or vector DB that they DB that they train over time for your environment. I kind of wonder how that works on the back end, but I imagine it must plug into CloudWatch, CloudTrail, all of that
Yeah, you get
as
some sort
well.
of metrics and audit logs of what the heck it's doing, right? Yeah.
So is this for like having something you can dispatch to go and investigate incidents or?
I think so. Yeah, it's kind of the way
Okay.
I was kind of going in and out of the keynote yesterday. So I was just kind of picking up bits and pieces here and there. They did a nice little pre-recorded demo of it, and it kind of looked just like that. Like same with the Kiro one, you kind of task it with something and it goes off and does that work for you. They were giving some interesting, I don't know if this was Kiro or DevOps, probably Kiro, but like, feeding it your backlog and then you go
Okay.
off and live your outside of work life, and then you come back in the morning and, resprinkled fairy dust over everything and it's all done for you. So that'd be interesting to see how that works. But yeah, it's got, I think all of these agents, there's a third one, I think they've got some sort of ability to be leveraging the platform and using it on your behalf and doing work for you.
That'd be nice if true. I mean, I think it would be interesting. I imagine you'd probably have to have a pretty well specced out backlog
I would
for
think
that to work
so.
properly.
I would think so. And I, yeah, backlog would be the first problem. And the other thing is, that's a good segue again into the security agent. Does the same sort of thing, security related, works on your behalf behind the scenes. And this was what caught my eye. I wrote down define your requirements, and then the security agent checks against those standards, your applications against the standards, which is really cool. Now,
yeah.
The problem is, kind of to your point, is you've got to have those well-defined requirements, right? And I don't know about you, but a lot of times those come after the fact, not necessarily
right.
the beginning of the project.
And I imagine this is hooking into guard duty or or inspector and that kind of thing, right? So I guess you really need to need those requirements defined, and you probably need to feed it some info about your tech stack and your application details, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I wonder how it handle. I guess it's probably looking for what are your data storage requirements? Are they? Do you have separation concerns? That kind of thing. TRP like GDRP.
Yeah. I think the one good thing about go ahead. Sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that this one's pretty compelling to me, I think, if it can deliver on that.
Yeah. I think all three of them are interesting. And what I was going to say is all three of them are in preview. And if I remember so you can use them free of charge for now. So now's the time to go and kick the tires on these, try them out, and see if they do what you... Not necessarily what they've been pitched as being able to do, right? But for your particular use case, will they help you be more, not effective, but I guess effective, right?
Efficient, yeah.
Whenever I say the word effective, I think of you are an effective team. Do you know the reference?
No. What's this?
It's a Tom Cruise movie where they're flying over the planet. What's it called?
Okay.
And it's him and some a woman in like a little space station, and they keep getting told by the thing in space higher up than them that they are an effective team. Are you Googling it? You'll figure it out.
I'm Googling it right now. Yeah,
it's actually a good movie. Tom Cruise, like, I won't give it away. He just flies all. You must have seen this.
Oblivion. Is that the movie?
Did you find it?
Is it Oblivion?
Oblivion, that's it, yeah.
I've never seen this.
Oh, really? Okay, you should add it to your watch list. It's a good one. I really, if it's on, not that I watch cable anymore, but like if I see it in my, Netflix or wherever it's streaming, they know more about what I like to watch than I like to what I want to watch. So if it pops up in a feed or whatever, I'll generally flip it on. It's a neat little movie.
Yeah. Cool. I'll check it out. Oh, I remember when this came out, 2013.
Yeah, it's an old one now. Yeah. It's a cool concept. All right. So there you go. We're already scattering movie talk into the conversation. All right. So the next thing that they talked about, and I know next to nothing about this, but it's a technology that I've always found really interesting because I've always thought voice was really the next wave of computing, and maybe it still will be, but I think the devices that we ended up with in our houses, like Echoes and other things, just kind of missed. I don't think they fulfilled kind of what everybody thought they would end up doing.
They didn't fulfill the Star Trek promise, right?
No.
Again. Yeah.
Everywhere in my house, there's probably an Echo listening to you. And literally all we do is we ask it to play music or give us the weather. And I made a bad choice on buying a couple with displays. So now I get ads for shit that I don't want to buy on Amazon. But that's a different podcast. So the announcement is Nova 2 Sonic, real-time conversational speech-to-speech. And this is like the second iteration because Sonic...
Right.
Has been around for a while. And it just caught my eye because of my disappointment with voice technology. And every time I see a speech to speech solution, I immediately am like, ooh, I'm going to go try that out. So I spent some time today not doing anything, but trying to think of like a couple little demos I could do or something with it. Because I know they'll come out with, how do you take a trip or your shopping list or whatever, because they always seem to do the same demos, right? But I thought it was really interesting. Just it's got all sorts of new like cadence controls to make it sound more natural. it connects, or it connects, it integrates with Kinect now. So you can use Nova 2 Sonic as essentially the agent that the person on the other end is talking to.
That makes a ton of sense. That's probably the main use case for this.
Yeah, I would think so, right? Or in your applications, like if you've got some sort of voice-based application or something like that. There was something else, and I hope I'm not saying something that isn't true, but I think it did translation as well. Like you could basically have it go between languages, and they've added a bunch of new languages that it supports. So this just grabbed my attention because I've always been interested in that voice technology and stuff like that. So I don't know if what you think about that.
Well, I think the Kinect use case makes a ton of sense. They've been pushing to get that automated as fast as they possibly can, right?
Right.
It looks like it's people prefer it. I'm just looking at the page now, and they ran comparisons against GPT Realtime and Gemini 2.5 Flash. And the majority of the time, people seem to prefer Nova 2.
Based on what?
Across the board.
What does, like, give you any measures they used?
They just say human preference evaluations. So I guess it's just, you know, which one is a better rendering of the voice that you're doing. This is across all the various languages. They do American English, masculine, feminine, Spanish for both French, German, etc. Although apparently it's not very good for Portuguese or German.
You're still learning some languages at this point.
Hindi too, yeah.
Yeah.
But it kind of really interesting for that use case. And then also if you can do a real-time voice-to-voice, right? So you can have kind of more natural feeling decision loops in that Kinect process, like for navigating phone trees, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess you could probably pipe that off to whatever other system if you wanted to, like another LLM, like if you're querying a search, like kind of, or you're asking a question, like trying to do a Google search or something.
Yeah. Or I was also thinking like sentiment analysis and stuff like that with using comprehend or something. Like, could you feed it into that? So you kind of, I don't really know a lot about comprehend. I don't think it's real time. But being able to kind of, it would be really cool in real time to kind of, how's this person feeling right now? Like, are they pissed off? Are they, you know, happy with, because I would suspect most of this would be used for customer service, right? Like you said, with Kinect and stuff like that. So I think it'd be neat to kind of see what you could tie it to. I have a couple ideas bouncing around in my head, and I don't have anything real to show because it's just ideas, but I've got a Seinfeld thing that's bouncing in my head, speech to speech. So I might plug away on that a little bit when I've got some holidays over the break and see if I can get something done.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I mean, it does text input or speech input and outputs text and speech also. So you could do a lot with that. You could have the output go to another agent system, right? And you could call APIs with that, something like that. I wonder if it can actually invoke any APIs or tools. I guess we'll have to look into that.
Yeah. Like, are you thinking like you make an API call through the gateway or push an event onto EventBridge or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. Just some sort of way to get something actionable out of it.
Yeah. You know what would be really cool? If you could use it where for customer service and I call up and they ask me to give them my account number and I give them my account number and then the human comes on the line and the first thing to do is ask me for my account number. And I'm like, shouldn't you have that already? Like, okay, so there's the killer app for it. I can say my account number and the customer service person who answers the call already knows my account number. I would say that's a win. Perfect. Totally. So that's my second one that grabbed my attention. And the other two that I have really aren't Gen AI related, but I thought they were interesting. Number three is DB savings plans. So you can now do, I guess before they were just reserved instances. Now you've got saving plan options for your databases. And I think it covers like all the databases, Aurora, Dynamo, RDS.
Document
I think
DB.
I said DocumentDB in there. I don't know. I feel like I'm missing a few, but it's timely for me because I was literally talking to somebody today and they're like, wow, our RDS bill is getting big. And, you know, same old thing. There's probably some stuff that's orphan. There's probably some stuff that is a large when it could be a medium, that kind of stuff. But then once you get that cleaned up, being able to get a little more flexibility on a savings plan versus a reserved instance purchase. So I would suspect I'll be maybe trying that out in the new year once I clean up some old stuff.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, these are the kind of things that creep up on you, right? Especially when you're provisioning new tenants or you just have old legacy environments that come up. This is great. I know at work we're going to be, we'll probably implement these as soon as they're available, I would imagine.
Yeah, I didn't check availability. Like, I'm not sure if you went into the console right now, are DB savings plans available? I don't know. But it grabbed my attention. It was just timely. So I'll be making some commitments in January, I would suspect, to lower some bills. And then, and the fourth thing is, I know people are still going to throw shade at this, but it's a regional NAT gateway. And it's not exactly what I was kind of hoping for. But as I thought about it a little more, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't really make sense. So, you know how right now, if you have some sort of instance or resource in a private subnet needs to get out, you deploy a NAT gateway, right? And that NAT gateway is bound to the availability zones, because it's highly available in the AZ where it's deployed, right? If you had two AZs or three AZs, you need two or three NAT gateways, and they add up, right? They're costly. What you can do now with the regional NAT gateway is you deploy a single NAT gateway in a region, you associate it to the VPC, and it adds and removes capacity based on the number of AZs that you're covering. And on top of that, you no longer, if you didn't have something like a load balancer or whatever, but if you just had sort of egress traffic, then you don't even need public subnets anymore. So it's not bound to subnets and AZs in your environment. I always find it funny that some of these announcements are just timely, right? Like, I ran a report the other day and I'm like, oh, we've got a bunch of NAT gateways, but we're not pushing enough traffic, so they're essentially idle. I don't think we'll save money, because I looked very quickly at the cost, the pricing, and I think it's pretty much going to be a wash. Maybe even a little more expensive. I got to do some math, because it's more of a managed service, I guess, now, right? But I was kind of thinking, it can scale a lot more. You can add more IPs to it, so you can get even more scale if you needed to. I might try this. I don't know if I'll get to it before the holidays, but again, it might be a January thing for me to look in a couple environments where maybe we just get away with a single regional NAT gateway rather than having multiple NAT gateways in a VPC. Might be worth a shot.
I don't see it. It's probably worth looking at, right? It just feels like a service that should have been regional from the start, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like, or maybe like the internet gateway, right?
Yeah.
In that kind of same vein.
Yeah.
But the ability to add more IPs and have it scale automatically more effectively on the back end is pretty interesting.
Now on the scaling thing, one thing caught my eye. Like, so let's say you create a VPC, two AZs, pretty standard, and then you decide to add a third one. That regional NAT gateway won't see that third AZ for a long period of time. I want to say 60 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So you'd have to
plan. Can you force it up?
Yeah. I didn't see it in the news release, but I also didn't read the documentation. So maybe there is something there, but I'm pretty sure I saw something like it's not like instantaneous that suddenly that third AZ now has outbound traffic through the NAC gateway. So it takes a little bit of time.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of interesting. I guess you're not exactly spinning up subnets every day. Yeah. So it's not that big a problem, but it would be nice to see that pick it up faster.
Yeah. And it would be one of those things that you would want to make sure people are aware of. Because you know what's going to happen, right? You're like, it doesn't work. Yeah. And you're like, what do you mean it doesn't work? Right. So, and then go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's going to waste a lot of support time. So,
the only thing you'll get is it doesn't work. You'll be like, all right, could you give me a little more than that? And the one feature that I really wanted to see, but like I said, in hindsight, it doesn't make a lot of sense. If it's regional and I have multiple VPCs in one region, can I wire all of those VPCs into the single NAT regional NAT gateway? And it doesn't appear that's the idea.
Okay.
If you have some time, look at the documentation for me before the next one and we'll follow up. But when I very briefly looked at it, to me, it looked like it was a one-to-one relationship between a VPC.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. So, so it saves you one deployment, I guess, on a regular VPC.
Yeah.
Layout, like 2AZ, it saves you one resource.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have thought it would have been absolutely killer if it was regional and you could tie like up to five VPCs to a single NAT gateway. Right?
Yeah.
That would be awesome because think about that. It's a managed service, so it scales, it's highly available. And then as a customer, hopefully it reduces my bill. Because now, let's just do the simple math. If you have five VPCs, and each of those VPCs is 2 AZs in size, you got 10 NAT gateways, right?
I guess is you don't necessarily want to automatically attach it across all of the VPCs. You might want to have a single point of egress or ingress, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can see that.
I think it would be killer if it was a one to many up to a certain limit, right? Like, man, I'd be changing a whole bunch of configurations like now.
Yeah. I mean, because one NAT gateway, if you just leave it idle, is something like $100 to $200 a month, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
just sitting around.
They're expensive. Have you heard of the NAT gateway alternative? It's an open source solution. I think it's just called Bleep NAT.
Oh, okay. Is it just like a an EC2 instance with a public IP? Okay.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's
makes
it's,
sense.
I'll see if I can find it. Yeah, it's fck-net. And it's essentially exactly what you said. You pay for, I guess it's a machine image that you get in your account, and you run that instead.
Makes sense. Yeah. I've basically built a NAT gateway by accident, I guess. NAT gateway at home.
Yeah. Build a NAT gateway.
You set up an EC2 instance. You have like an Nginx routing set up for your Minecraft server, and then you're trying to get traffic back from through Cloudflare or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Well, are you doing something with like a home lab and then setting up your internal stuff through?
Yeah.
Are you using what's it called? Nginx Proxy Manager?
No, I don't think so.
No. Okay. Because it's funny as you start talking about this stuff, because I've got a home lab and it's really annoying because I do have DNS names on Pi-hole, but I don't have any SSL certs. So with Nginx Proxy Manager, you set it up and you can either use, what's it called? What's the free cert service?
Not open. Is it open VPN related?
No, it's just like a... Oh, damn it. Why can't I remember what it's called?
Like Let's Encrypt or something?
Yeah, Let's Encrypt. So you can connect it to Let's Encrypt, and it will give you certs for your internal stuff. Or You can set it up with it's still how's it work? You can do verification with DNS or something as well. So I've got mine set up, and I've got it connected to Route 53. But I'm still having a problem with my cert, so it still complains when I hit stuff in my own lab. So you made me think of it because when you started saying Nginx and proxy and stuff, I'm like, this kind of sounds what I've been working on. We'll have to have a home lab walkthrough one time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, mine's just it's running on Docker on a Windows box, which is that's like sacrilegious, but I have the license.
It does, yeah. It does the trick, right? I've got I bought myself a little Intel NUC, nuke, whatever you call it.
And, oh yeah.
It sits down by the TV, and it has all my little services on it. But if that thing goes down, pretty much I can't do anything. So,
it's mission critical.
Yeah. I need another one. I need a UPS on it a little bit. The worst part is it's all connected to Home Assistant, and all my automation stop working, right? And it's no fun. All right, so that gets us through the first part of our chat, so our reinvent recap for day one or two, whatever you want to call it. Is there anything from reinvent that we didn't talk about that you've come across and you think is interesting?
I mean, I think those are the main ones. I guess just to go back to the DevOps agent, I'm kind of interested to see how that will interact with state management for DevOps tasks. So for Terraform workloads, for CloudFormation, CDK, that kind of thing, right? Do you really want that kind of system going off and making changes to your environment when you've got that state managed as code? That's going to be interesting to see how it interacts with that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, it's in preview. So now's the time to poke at it and at least get some sense of what it is. Because I would suspect generally what happens with me is reInvent comes and goes, and then I get inundated with what's this? Yeah. Right. So I'm probably going to spend a bit of time brushing up on these things and just because I know the questions are coming at some point. Huh? All right.
They will.
Yeah. The next part I wanted to talk about was the then to now thing. And we kind of already talked about the fact that we really haven't done one of these since 2024. And, you know, wow, so much has changed, right? So I made a quick series of things that I wanted to kind of walk through. And since we're talking about AWS, why don't we start with Kiro?
Okay.
Formerly Q, now Kiro. Let's change the names of stuff so it can be confusing. Any immediate thoughts? I'll let you tell us first, and then I'll tell you what I think.
I mean, it seems like this is the direction that developer tools are going. There's a couple of these tools in a similar vein that are coming out. Cursor is huge right now. Windsurf was huge, and then it got bought up by Google, and now it's Anti-Gravity. Kiro seems pretty good. It's got the spec-driven development kind of workflow, right? Where it walks you through defining what are the actual requirements for the project and what's the plan to go through and implement them. It seems solid. Yeah. It's not. I don't think it's my preferred iteration of these tools so far, but it seems all right.
Yeah. Okay. I have some thoughts. First, why does everything have to be a fork of VS Code? That's my first. I don't want another IDE, right? I just want to use the tools that I already have.
Sure.
So first off, Q in general, Q, not Q for business, I guess originally called it Q developer, and now it's Kiro CLI or whatever they call that, right? That is my go-to tool for day-to-day stuff, just because I spend pretty much every day, all day in AWS, and I find Q CLI, now Kiro CLI, really good for what I do. Now, I like the idea of spec-driven development, and I think I might have been using it wrong, and I'll explain what I mean. So I'm like, okay, vibe coding is bad. So we have to do spec-driven development. So I fire up Kiro, I'm in the IDE, I click the little spec-driven thing, and I say, this is what I want you to build, right? But then isn't it pretty much just vibe coding if I don't read the 800 lines worth of specs it gives me? And I'm just like, do it. And then like before I know it, and I'm speaking from experience here, before I know it, it has created such an over-engineered system with 400 tests for my silly little app that tells me the information about my AWS accounts. Right. I've talked to you this about this before, right? Like slash AWS ID 12345. I have so many tests for it that I'm just like, what the hell has happened? I just blew it up and started again, right? Like, so is it really spec driven if you just accept the 800 tasks it creates for itself and you say, just do task one? And really all I'm saying is do task one. And it's like, I'm done. And I'm like, okay, do task two. I'm not really. This is vibe coding, right? Like, so I don't know.
It lost me pretty quick. Yeah, it's vibe coding, and the vibes are very corporate, is what it is.
That's actually a really great way to say it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, I was just going to say, you can segue into video games, right? I play video games with a crew, and there's a couple people that want to know the backstory and the origin of every character in the game. And I'm like sitting here going, are we going to fucking play this game or what? Like, are you guys just going to read for the whole night? And I'm just like, I didn't join a reading group, man. I joined a let's go shoot some shit. I kind of got the same thing with spec-driven development in Kiro. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying for the type of stuff that I do, I'm just like, oh my god, it's so over-engineered. So anyways, that's my take on the IDE part of Kiro. I use the CLI part every day, all day. It for what I do, it's the best,
and I think that's the future. I think that these specialized CLI tools, of which there seem to be more and more, but the domain specific CLI for something like AWS is super useful. Like, I've used it for querying logs, for investigating metric things, pulling up lists of resources, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you can tell it to go off and find something, and it'll run churn in the background for a minute or two, and then come back with the list of results that you asked for or whatnot, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of like the ideal use case, is have a little minion you can send off to go into the account and pull info for you. And I think that's going to be what those frontier agents do, I think, in a very similar vein.
Yeah. They're just not running on your client anymore, your laptop. You're giving it instructions, and the horsepower is coming upstream.
Yeah, exactly. And it's closer to where the models are actually hosted to. So maybe that has some effect. But I think for the development side of things, Kiro feels super corporate, super enterprise, which is not really what you want for these little tools that you're building, right? Yeah. Or if you need a suite of scripts to go and check something or tweak some things. Yeah. So I think there's just better tools for that, frankly.
I can't think of anything that I would disagree with on that, right? It's just, it's so over-engineered. At least in my experience, it's been so over-engineered.
Yeah. I mean, the reason these are all VS Code forks is because that's easy to build something off of pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
And the best one of these, though, and the one that kind of brings their own special sauce to it, is Cursor with the tab complete, right? Yeah. Like, that is an extremely useful tool if you're working in IDE.
Yeah.
And their Composer agent is pretty good, too, actually.
I've never used it, so I can't really kind of make any comments. I just like my NeoVim, right? I just want my NeoVim and... Kiro CLI does have autocomplete built in, so like it's finishing my CLI commands for me as I'm grabbing stuff. The only thing that I have to do, and I think it supports the agents MD format now, like that kind of, I don't want to say it's open source, but sort of the industry piece. I really need to, and I always think about it when it happens, and then I'm like, God, why didn't you fix that? And then I forget. I just want it to put no CLI pager on the end of every single man that it asked me to run. Like, if I have to hit space or enter a bunch of times to get that response,
yeah,
I'm going to be angry. I just, like, show it to me. I don't want a page. Talk about silly problems, right? But it changes my mood very quickly. So I keep saying I should put that in my rules. And then I only think about it when it asks me to run a command. I'm like, son of a.
Totally. That's a great thing to put in there. That, and if you have any like specific, I know for working in Python environments, there's a million ways to manage your VMs, right? But what I've found is if I can put my, tell it, okay, we're using UV to manage the environment, use UV.
I'm shaking my head because you're making me think of other episodes. We're going to sit down one day and you're going to tell me or show me how you get it to listen to what you say. Because I'm like, don't run these scripts, right? Do not run a Python script without it being in an environment. And I use UV, so always use UV. And it's like, okay, I'm going to run Python, blah, blah. I'm like, are you using the virtual environment? No. I'm like, I just literally asked you, it's like, okay, well then I'll run source, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I'm like, okay, that's fine. But you're not using, like, where's your UV sync command? And it's trying to use the pip3
install. Agony.
I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, and again, I've got it in my rules, right? Like, do this. And it just ignores it. Anyways. Beautiful. All right. So enough slagging on poor Kiro Q, whatever you want to call it, because it is, in all fairness, it's my go-to tool, right? It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
So the next one I have on my list is something that I tried, but I'll save my comment to a second. Have you tried Gemini 3 yet?
I have, yeah.
What do you think?
So Gemini 3 Pro is probably one of the best models I've used for answering questions and this is specifically in the web console, like in the actual Gemini webpage. It's really good.
Yeah.
When you try to get it to use tools in your terminal, it does not want to do it. There's weird bugs. I don't know. I guess it's just the nature of that model, but it seems like there are times where it just does not want to follow instructions for tool calling, or it fails the tool call, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I know it gets really good. People are saying a lot of good things about it. And I'm kind of, here's what my tool set looks like. Kiro, CLI, right? Not the IDE. ChatGPT and Claude. Those are kind of the three that I go between. But what I've noticed lately is ChatGPT, whether it's the desktop or Codex, I'm using it less and less and less, to the point where I'm like, should I be paying for this anymore? And I think I have the exact same thoughts on Gemini 3. In the web console, rock solid, right? The pro, it's good. You can notebook, you've got all those things available to you. It's really good. CLI, right? Like, I kind of experienced the same thing. It feels really slow, right? At least in my experience. Like, I'm like, dude, what's going on, man? Like, come on, let's keep going. And I don't have that same experience with Kiro CLI. And then the other thing is, this to me sums up Google just in a nutshell. They've got like, they can build all their own chips, right? They've trained their own their models on their own chips. They have global infrastructure from all the years of being like the search platform and all the other tools.
Yeah.
And I cannot figure out how to give these guys my 20, 30, 40 bucks a month. Like, I've tried three or four times and I'm like, Hughes, like, I have money. I want to give it to you so I can get the full benefits of this. Like, I don't want to get throttled every time I run some command or get pushed, like, fall back to the older models. I want to use the new stuff. How do I just give you some cash? Like, it's the only business. I'm like, if I wanted to go to ChatGPT right now, sign up, there's like a button, like, buy now. I click it, I give them my credit, I'm done. I've tried like three or four times with Gemini and I can't figure out how to give them my credit card. And it dumps me on the Google Cloud console. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
yes.
You gotta,
good luck.
You gotta know Google Cloud.
Yeah, I'm gonna go do something else. Like, I guess you don't want my $20 or whatever it is, $30. It seems really good, but like, how do I just pay for it so I could try it out and maybe turn off one of the other ones that I'm just, isn't a bad model, but I'm just not using a lot anymore because I prefer some of the other ones, right? So yeah, that's my take
totally
on Gemini 3.
And this is such classic Google, right? Like they can't build a product to save their lives, but they have all of the amazing, the most amazing technology, right? And they have all the data.
I could go to 6,000 micro SaaS sites and every single one of them will have a giant button that says buy now. I just click it and I give them my credit card and I pay. I can't figure it out on the Google console. I know if anybody ever listens to this, they're going to be like, that guy's an idiot. It's so easy. But if you don't use it all the time,
yeah,
I just look at the console and I'm like, okay, I'll click billing. I go to billing and it's like, your bill is zero. I'm like, I know.
Great.
I know it's zero. How do I give you my cash? I can't figure it out. So that's my take on Gemini. I've heard really great things. I keep getting pushed back to the older model 2.5 because I'm just using it for free and can't figure out how to pay for it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
There we go.
I mean, I've been, yeah, that it's such classic Google. I've been using like OpenRouter and in combination with OpenCode.
Yep.
Which is kind of in the same vein as Claude Code. They developed it and compiled it on Bun, that kind of thing, one of those CLI terminal apps. And you can plug in to OpenRouter, and then OpenRouter offers pretty much every model that you could possibly want, right?
Okay.
I don't know if Gemini is on here or the latest Gemini is on here, though. Okay. Can check.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I had to go and futz around on the Google Cloud, console page, it's just like how in AWS there's a whole ecosystem of SaaS companies that exist to simplify the experience, right?
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing, you can get in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll end up paying for something I don't need, right? The next one that I have on my list is OpenAI, ChatGPT, whatever you want to call it. I still think it's, you know, from my experience, when I use it, it seems quite capable. It does what I want it to do. It does it snappy. Generally, the quality is pretty good. Sometimes I think it gets turned around, but they all do. But I'm just finding that I'm not using it as much. Codex or the desktop. I don't know what you think. Hey,
we're back.
I don't know if we're live anymore. I guess I don't have 9.8 megabytes.
I still see the on the air sign, so
yeah, I see it in YouTube, but I don't see it in Twitch. Now is this thing, it still says live. I don't know, let's just keep going, we'll get what we get.
Yep.
I don't know. I've had some weird stuff lately. And you know, we were talking about Home Lab. I put in Unbound, so I'm using like my own recursive DNS. And part of me is like, is something going on with that? Like, I don't see how it could be, but every once in a while I've had some weird internet connectivity. I don't know.
I mean, if you're hosting your own DNS, you never know.
Well, no, but I'm not really hosting my own DNS, right? I'm just, instead of going to Google DNS or whatever, Unbound is my recursive. So I talk to
you're
it
just
and it goes and makes the calls for me. So I don't know. We were talking about monitoring earlier. I guess I need more monitoring.
Guess so.
Yeah. Oops. I don't know where you cut off, but I was just saying, as far as ChatGPT goes, I just find that I'm defaulting to other tools first, to the point where over the last like couple weeks, I'm like, Should I maybe not pay for this for a bit and see if I miss it? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been defaulting to 5.1 for planning tasks. So if I have some document editing that I want to do, 5.1 is still my preference. Mm-hmm. But for actually writing code, I'm defaulting to Claude, Sonnet, and or Opus at this point.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what we're describing here is actually the future, right? Where you probably end up paying for a couple products because you like product A for this, you like product B for that, and then product C kind of does a good job across a bunch of things. So you keep it hanging around and you kind of know a little bit about all three of them and you use them interchangeably throughout the day, depending on what you're doing. Maybe that's our future.
Yeah, most likely. Like you'll probably have an API key for your provider that you're using, and then you can access whatever models they're hosting, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of pretty much what I do for Claude, is I'll go through Bedrock for the most part. Or for ChatGPT, I'll go through OpenRouter, right? Like other places are hosting these models.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. And then the last one I have on my list is Claude, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, I generally use Claude for all of my writing. And again, I'm for any sort of technical work I'm doing, I default to Kiro just because of the nature of what I do. But a lot of my writing is assisted with Claude. Like if I'm writing a new statement of work, or if like today I was trying to explain some steps that we did in to set up an environment, and I wrote kind of what I thought, and then I pass it through Claude and say, okay, this is what I'm trying to do. This is the audience I'm trying to explain it to. Make this make sense for me based on here's the garbled text that I came up with on these are the 8 things that we did and why we did them. Help me turn it into something that other people understand what the hell it is I'm trying to say. And I find it really good at that. So
yeah,
it's how I'm kind of using the tools right now. What about
you? Yeah, organizing. Yep. Organizing, synthesizing, summarizing, documentation tasks are really good. Like if you have that, again, like you said, that block of kind of a brain dump, essentially, of what happened, what you've done, synthesize this into something useful, readable, that you can put in a README. Really good for that.
Yeah.
That's a good use case. Kind of funny, I guess, if you're using Q all the time, then you're using Claude 4, Claude, right?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's the default.
Yeah. I think it's, is it Sonnet maybe?
Yeah. I think it's pretty sure it's Sonnet.
When you start it up, it tells you what you're using. I'm going to fire it up.
Yeah.
I want to say it's Sonnet. I wonder, I know they said at some point, Claude Sonnet 4. Let's see. You can do 4.5, Sonnet 4.5.
Oh, you can.
By default, it uses auto and it chooses the task based on, it says here, model chosen by task for optimal usage and consistent quality. But you can then override that and do Sonnet 4.5, Sonnet 4, or Haiku. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I never bothered because it does what I need it to do and I just let it do its thing. It says here that, interesting. Sonnet 4.5 is 1.3 credits. Sonnet 4 is 1.3 credits. And then Haiku is 0.4.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Haiku 4.5 and what it's using.
That's the one thing about Anthropic is their pricing is still the worst.
Yeah.
Across the board. Yeah.
Yeah. To be honest, I didn't even try to figure it out anymore. I find all the pricing is, if people complain about pricing in AWS, like this is on a whole other level, right? Like to try to understand exactly what it's costing you, how much it's going to cost, like, you know, all the tokens and I just use it until I get throttled. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'll go take a coffee break and come back and see if they unthrottle me by the time I come back.
Guess I've hit my limit. Oh, well,
yeah. Time for a break. I'll go for a walk. Yeah. Very good. Okay. So my Q story, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay.
I splurged and I bought myself a 3D printer. I hang around in a Discord group. Yeah, I hang around a Discord group. And honestly, I had a little bit of FOMO because a bunch of the people in there were always sharing like all the crazy shit they were printing and, you know, the, how they loved their printers. And I was like, ugh. And I just eventually I was like, screw it. I'm going to buy it. Right.
Yeah.
So I bought myself a printer and I've been printing some stuff on it. Right. Like it's been pretty fun. I think that printer is pretty much not stopped since I got it. Like, I'm like, how long will this take? And it's like, it'll finish at 3 a.m. I'm like, great. It'll be ready when I get up in the morning. And I wake up, grab a coffee, feed the cats, go, oh, what's on the printer? And there's something new, right? And so today, I thought I'd give it a kick, a try. And because I was in Kiro, I keep calling it Q, but it's Kiro now. I'm like, I think the prompt was something like, I bought a 3D printer. I've been printing lots of stuff, but I'd love to know what you think I should print next. Hit enter, right? I'm like, between meetings or something. I got a couple minutes. I'm like, I just want to see what this thing will do. It came back and it's like, congratulations. And I'm paraphrasing. Congratulations on your new printer. However, I'm unable to answer questions about 3D printing because I'm built for AWS. And I can help you on AWS stuff. I'm like, hey, guardrails, look at that. So it's just because we were talking about models. I was like, all right. So then I put it in ChatGPT. And I'm working on Dwarf Fortress coasters.
Oh, nice. Earth. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, the kind of scary thing is, like I had talked to it about Dwarf Fortress in the past about strategy or something. Probably I cooked myself in my dungeon with trying to build a lava furnace or something, right? So I probably asked it for some help and it remembered. Obviously all these things have memory now, right? And it was like, oh well, you know, if you're looking for something fun to print, I know you like Dwarf Fortress. And I'm like, oh yeah, we had that conversation. I'm like, took me a minute. I'm like, how did that wait a second? So anyways, perfect. Well, this has been fun, man. We do have one other segment to get through here and we'll wrap it up even though we had a few little technical difficulties. We always ended our previous run of podcasts with movie recommendations. And I know we brought one up already. What are you watching right now? Or what would you recommend we watch?
Last week we watched a movie called Heart Eyes. I don't know if you've heard of this.
I have not.
Okay. Well, it's a slasher that came out earlier this year and it's a Valentine's Day horror movie.
Okay.
Kind of some good riffs on the Hallmark kind of themes.
Yeah.
But it was good actually. It was a satisfying fun time.
Okay.
I would say thumbs up to the Valentine's Day slasher.
I will add it to my list. Speaking of lists, have you heard about Letterboxd?
Letterboxd, yeah, okay.
Okay, so I signed up for it because, again, one of the Discord groups I'm in, one of the guys is a real just movie buff.
Oh, yeah.
Just watches so many movies. So he's like, you should sign up. It's really cool. So I checked it out, and I signed up, and I've been slowly adding movies to it. And I'm telling you this because we were chatting back and forth about something. I think it was around Halloween and we were all just trying to find pretty much shitty Halloween movies to watch, right? And he got me on to like a director from the 60s or whatever. And some of the stuff, I was just like, what am I watching? But it's like these total classic B horror movies. I'll look it up for you. And if you're on Letterboxd, let me know and I'll add you. And I've watched a couple of them, like 1968 or something. And I'm just like, times are different, man. Times are different. You know what the nice thing is, though, what I found, and I say to Karen all the time, is in those old movies, you can actually hear the dialogue.
Yes.
You don't have to turn on subtitles.
Man, you take it for granted now, that and actually being able to see the actors.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not all sort of weirdly lit or the entire movie is in like the midnight hour, so it's completely pitch black, and you're just like, I think I see something happening. I'm not quite sure. But yeah, I'm always amazed when I watch an old movie. I can hear the dialogue. I'm like, holy crap, that's what's supposed to happen. So anyways, that's good. Okay, so I have one really cheesy movie recommendation, but it's on theme for the season. It's Tinseltown on Netflix.
Okay.
It's Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
Who's like some big action movie guy, and he kind of, you know, has some trouble, and he ends up in like a small town in England, in like a local theater, and it's Rebel Wilson. And if you're into like, you know, Hallmark movies, you know how it's that time of year, right, where they're just playing them nonstop. It is a really fun movie, and Kiefer Sutherland I shouldn't say surprisingly good, but when I'm like, okay, well, he's in this movie. It was we had fun watching that movie. So there you go. If you're looking for like a holiday themed movie, Tinseltown is worth it for 90 minutes of just not worrying about shit.
Excellent. Well, that's going right on my list.
I can't wait to hear your review, but Kay and I both enjoyed it and had a good chuckle a couple times, and just the theme of it in general is just good. Yeah, it's good.
Awesome.
Well, there you go. Episode, I don't know what the episode is, but I don't think it really matters at this point. It's episode one again, as we start.
Episode one.
Yeah.
It's a new season. Fresh start.
It's a new season. It's a new season. So, awesome. Well, outside of the technical difficulties, pretty good.
Yeah.
I will continue watching Reinvent to see if anything else comes up. I tried to look at a couple things today, and I didn't really see anything interesting on the news announcements. I was just kind of like, man, whatever, and kept moving on. And I was kind of hoping for some big sort of stuff today, but I didn't see anything.
Reveal.
Yeah, I kind of loaded it a couple times thinking maybe I've just missed it. Let me see if they've thrown anything up before we call it a night.
No, I'm sure they're saving the best.
I saw was SageMaker.
Okay. They're probably saving the best for the big keynote.
Well, you know what I heard was that Werner Vogels is not doing a keynote this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm glad that I didn't go to Vegas.
No kidding.
That's like, for me, that's like the highlight. I'd literally wait for that keynote. I don't know if that's true but I guess that would be tomorrow's Thursday, right? So he normally does the Thursday morning thing. So I guess we'll find out.
Yep.
I heard somewhere.
That's too bad.
Yeah, being two different people. So I don't know, man. Who knows?
Nah, guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, man. Well, let's call it here. And we will reconvene next week with probably some other Reinvent announcements to chat about.
More Reinvent, and there were plenty of Gen AI announcements that came out even just this week. So
yeah. So
we'll talk about the Chinese models maybe.
Oh, okay. All right. Are they catching up?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So we're all going to be using DeepSeek at this point.
It could be.
Could be.
It's certainly an option.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening, I don't know how many people are listening, but you'll have to wait till next week. All right, man. Bye for now. It was great catching up, and we'll chat next week.
Yep. Okay. Sounds good.
Bye.